So I'm my first.
Great way to start this episode.
I feel like I did not do very well there just now.
It's fine.
This is not good banter.
Well, I was reading a text, to be fair. I wasn't very present.
Okay. Well, CJ?
Yeah.
It's all you.
It's me.
Yeah.
It's me. Welcome, everybody, to Nerd Critic, a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is CJ.
I am Jordan. CJ here is our resident nerd.
Jordan here is our studied and credentialed critic.
CJ, what you wearing today? Morning. Other than your Superman ring.
I love my Superman ring.
I know, it's a great ring.
I am wearing a Superman ring. What socks am I wearing? Ooh, Donkey Kong socks.
DK, nice.
And then I have a Superman belt. And then under this button-up shirt that I have to wear for work, I have a Batman shirt.
Nice.
So, always representing.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. Well, today we're not talking about any of that. Today we're talking about something that I am particularly nerdy about, which will know if they listened to our Terminator franchise episode, which was as nerdy as it gets.
Yeah, we're definitely swapping spots on this one.
Today it's Terminator Dark Fate, and I am doing the nerd lead out, I think. I don't think CJ can nerd out as hard as I do and can about this franchise. I don't think it's possible.
No. Both on knowledge level and on passion.
I just need to call something out.
Okay.
I, over the past 30 seconds, watched CJ put his phone in his... Put his phone in his shirt pocket and then very quietly search his entire body for his phone before he went back to his shirt pocket to retrieve. And it was absolutely sublime, and I wish that I wish more than anything right now that we were on videos.
I was so confused. My notes are on my phone.
Looked at me as you gave yourself this full pat down.
I went front pockets. I went back pocket. I checked my notebook that's on the table. I was like, is it in the cover there?
It was amazing. All right, so really quickly here, we have above the line, we have the director who has become famous for I want to say Deadpool. He's Tim Miller. He's done a lot of stuff. He's known for the trailers were all about Deadpool. Directed by the same guy who did Deadpool. Great. He also did a couple he wrote a couple of episodes of Love, Death, and Robots, which is super popular on Netflix. So that's our director. James Cameron's name was all over the preview, so people might think that he directed this. He did not.
No, he did not.
And it was also written by not James Cameron, but by actually, it's got a huge list of credits.
It does. A story by. With
well,
James
story
Cameron.
By because it, and I don't. We'll remind people who haven't seen or haven't or listened to our Terminator franchise episode, but this was James Cameron's idea originally.
Yeah.
So he is the father of this franchise, very literally. Well, I guess not very literally. That's a weird image. But anyway, so there's a lot of story by credits, people who came on as writers and et cetera, et cetera. There's three screenplay by credits on here. We're not going to get into all that. Basically, there's a fairly significant number of people behind the story of this movie. So... or the writing of this movie. So there's that at the top. And then also the cast. The cast is probably the most significant thing here just because we've got Linda Hamilton returning, which was, I will be very honest, the thing that I was most excited about out of all of the things.
They also leaned into it both in the movie and in the preview.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this was, you know, if the movie wanted to earn your trust, or the previews wanted to earn your trust that this movie was worth giving Terminator another shot. And they did that by saying, hey, look, we've got Linda Hamilton back. And didn't you all miss her? Because the last movie she was in was in Terminator 2, which was, everyone agrees, the best of the franchise, which has become really huge and sort of haltingly successful. So she's back. Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. We've got Mackenzie Davis in the sort of salvific future person role. And then we've got Natalia Reyes, I want to say. I hope I'm not mispronouncing her name, playing Donnie, who is the person being saved primarily. And then Gabriel Luna playing Rev-9, the Rev-9 Terminator, who is the big bad. Which anyway, it's a good cast.
It's a good cast
overall. I want to say the first thing I want to say, because we're just gonna run right into the spoiler free part here, is that it's a really good cast, and that holds up pretty much throughout the movie. I think that if there was one big thing that I would say people can look forward to in this movie, it's a pretty killer cast.
I agree. I will also say, if we're doing the spoiler free stuff, I will also say that this was one of my favorite Schwarzenegger performances.
Yes.
Because he was funny.
Yeah.
And he was good. Like the whole movie didn't rest on him like the previous ones have. Mm-hmm. With like him and Linda, he is kind of a I don't want to say a smaller role, but a later player in the game. But when he shows up, I love him.
Yeah.
And I love the character, and I really enjoyed what they did with him.
I think we're seeing in this movie an Arnold Schwarzenegger who knows exactly what he is.
Yeah.
Understands his strengths and weaknesses as a performer, and plays to all of his strengths superbly.
Yeah, and I actually saw him on James Corden doing press for this movie. I don't know if it's just that I'm older or he's older or what, but he is a lot more personable than I remember him ever being.
He is. So I don't know. I can't speak to that either, but I do know from past sort of exposure to him as a person in various capacities, as a governor, as an actor, as a performer, as a guest on podcasts that I've listened to, that he is a very, very smart person.
He is very smart.
He's an incredibly intelligent person. And the persona that I think people associate with Arnold Schwarzenegger is, I mean, probably best articulated by the character in The Simpsons, whose name I can't remember, who is very clearly the Arnold Schwarzenegger analog, who ends up being president of the United States in one of the Simpsons iterations. Anyway, is very like that sort of caricature is not actually representative of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is actually probably a genius.
Yeah.
I say all that just because I think that sort of goes into how, after a long career and sort of intermittently acting in the last 10 or 20 years, he hasn't been acting a lot, that he does totally deeply understand who he is and what people expect of him and what his strengths are as a performer, and knows how to deliver. And it's really great in this movie.
I agree very much. I don't want to dive into this too much, but this didn't make a lot of money. I'm a little worried about the future of Terminator, because it's not doing great at the box office.
That's definitely, I think that's definitely like let's save that little point for the end of the episode.
Okay.
About
what comes next?
About what comes next?
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair.
So we'll tease that. We're going to talk a little bit about what we anticipate comes next, which there's more to say than probably not another movie, but you know.
Sure.
Yeah, well, there is more to say, so we'll wait on that.
So my initial spoiler-free, like, you know, quick review on how this movie was and if you should go see it. It's a good, solid addition to the Terminator franchise. It is not anywhere near the first or second one, but it is better than most of the other ones. And I had a lot of fun. It went a little over top sometimes, but I had a lot of fun and I really enjoyed it. And like, if you want a good action movie that you have fun, that is female led, and it has like a plot that's like good enough to keep you intrigued, then like go see this movie. It's a solid movie.
It's a solid, competent action movie.
Competent's a good word for
definitely.
It.
Definitely. And a couple of pretty great performances, not like transcendent performances, because I don't think the material was there, but definitely good enough to be worth your time performances.
Yeah, absolutely.
By Linda Hamilton and Mackenzie Davis, Arnie as well, of course, and Natalia Reyes, who I think carried her character just fine. Once again, loved the cast. Loved the I really liked the way the action scenes were constructed for the most part. It was really fun in the way that you want it to be fun. I liked the set pieces. I liked some of the inventiveness of the depictions of peril and like the stakes and how they were established and how they were the intensity didn't let up a lot, which is appropriate for a movie, for a Terminator movie, which is supposed to be basically one giant chase scene. So it was really great. Last thing I want to say is that, pardon my politics, but I was also obsessed with the fact that Downey was Mexican. That the sort of salvific heroine of the story was an actual person from Mexico, mm-hmm. which felt like a direct and unflinching response to the, I want to say, reprehensible political bend of Rambo Last Blood, which we talked a lot about. And this felt like a, you know, obviously this movie wasn't written in response to Rambo Last Blood, but boy, do you get like two different sides of the sort of perspective spectrum here. And I personally was just really heartwarmed and moved and gratified by that dynamic, that we start off in Mexico and that our main character or one of our main characters is Mexican. And it's sort of, without being preachy, making a kind of a statement, which I thought was really lovely.
And it was also something that was, that like she held her own, and she like had, like she was up against Linda Hamilton, right? Hardcore, like the basically the person that was playing her role 30 years ago. And she did really well. And like she acted really well. The character was good, a little underdeveloped, could have gotten a little more into it. And maybe their plans were to get more into it. But like, I think that it was kind of big shoes to fill, but she did really well.
Yep. And Mackenzie Davis is also a hard person to be on screen with because she's pretty scene steely, but she held her own.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Yeah.
I think that's a good spoiler free stuff. Can we spoil now?
Let's spoiler warning moving forward.
Spoiler warning. Also, there's not a lot to spoil.
Yeah.
This is,
you kind of know what is going to happen. Yeah.
This is not a complicated movie. No. This does not hold a lot of surprises. If you are still on the fence about whether to see this movie and you're also on the fence about whether or not to continue listening to this episode, I say
do both.
Listen on.
Yeah.
And then go see the movie when you have a chance. Yeah. It's a really fun movie. I think it's worth the big screen experience. Go see it. But also, don't wait to listen to this episode if you don't, if you're not like
super invested.
Yeah.
Also, if you're super invested, you've probably already seen it by
exactly.
now.
But, exactly.
So, yeah, listen on.
Listen on.
So let's nerd out a little bit.
You first.
Okay. The first thing is that I wanted to nerd out about the action scenes. For the most part, it'll live on both sides of my nerd and criticness.
Yes.
But I really enjoyed the action scenes. I really enjoyed like the first, because that was one of the strengths of T2, right? Is T2. The first time that John Connor is put into conflict with the TX-1000?
Sorry, John Connor in
what's the second
Terminator
one?
Two?
Yeah. What's the
T-1000?
The T-1000. Mm-hmm. So when John Connor is put into conflict for the first time against the T-1000, that action scene just lasts so long.
Yeah.
And it just goes and goes and goes, and they go into like the, what in the South they call it, bayou. They don't call that in LA, but that's what it is. And the trucks and the fences, the canal. Mm-hmm. And it lasts really long. And it like, it's really important that it lasts so long because it's like, holy crap, they cannot get away from this thing.
Yeah.
And this movie did that same thing. The first time we're in conflict, like most movies, it would be like at the factory, they would have a showdown in the factory, and then they would get away from him in the factory. I mean, they dropped like a piece of machinery that just smashed him, and they would get away for an extended period of time, and then eventually he might catch up. No, he just gets out of it, and he continues to come, and then they get in a car, and then the car dies, and then they go to the pharmacist, and then Linda finds him, and then he's back, and then it just, they could not escape him, which I thought was probably the biggest strength of this movie.
Yeah.
How daunting the bad guy was,
which is you has
Terminator
to be.
Essential.
Has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has to be an overwhelmingly powerful villain.
Yeah.
Who you are scared of because you know that if he gets close enough, you're dead.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And you see him kill a lot of people, which is great. I loved
which is great.
I loved his entrance a lot.
Yeah.
I loved that you don't see him kill anybody until they get to until he gets to the factory.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to assume it. And you know these, you know the franchise well enough to know that like anybody he comes in contact with and talks to is probably going to die.
Yeah.
It's really good. I liked the sort of like walking forward and touching the clothes and like, you know, I thought it was just really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my, well, the thing I think I want to nerd out most about, frankly, especially about the villain in particular, is I love that he was a performer. Like he was an actor, like an impersonator. Like he was going to,
man, he did real well too.
Yeah. He was going to become the right personality to get what he wanted in the moment. Mm-hmm. And like the guy's a really good actor, like hats off to Gabriel Luna. Like I will watch him in other things. I really liked his presence and physicality. And like, I liked how he could go from being this like, kind of like, oh, he's like so likable and human and interesting. Mm-hmm. And then like instantly he's a robot again. It's like super cool.
Yeah.
Which not like, it's not like a complicated thing, but like handled very well.
I think. I mean, it's like the little nuances of like, at first you see him talk to the dad.
Yeah.
And he's really cool and he's really charming. And the dad's like, that's weird. Her friends call her Danny. And then he's like, cool. And then immediately Danny, and you see that robot kind of lock back into place, and then later he's Southern in Texas.
Yes.
He's like, hey fellas, yeah, I've never prayed so hard than I have in the past 10 minutes. And it's like just a subtle thing, and you're like, yeah, like he just fit in wherever he went. Also, I really appreciated that he wasn't a giant Arnold Schwarzenegger type.
Oh yeah,
because he's gonna stick out wherever he goes. But this guy is just a normal looking, and I found it interesting that they chose somebody that was like somewhat ethnically ambiguous, you know what I mean? Like he definitely is Hispanic, but like he didn't, like, it just, he kind of fit in wherever he went. It just, he, yeah, could, he could also
be, he was an everyman.
He was an everyman.
Yeah.
But he was an everyman that in the action scenes you don't want to mess with. And that feels like a hard, yeah, balance, and they did it really well.
Yeah, no, it was really, really cool. I also really loved the moment in the preview that you see where he's like, my whole body's a weapon, you know? I was like so excited by that moment in the preview because I was like, oh, we're gonna see a different kind of Terminator machine here, which I was like, oh man, I was already geeking out, and that's exactly what we got, and I love that scene.
Yeah.
I love the scene where he goes through, and his explanation was that he has a metal hip from serving, totally, in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And they were just like, oh, like,
thank you for your service.
And yeah, he like goes on. I was like, this is so good.
Yeah.
I love this. I love that, like, perfect, you know, because it, and it's, you want to, it's like over and over again establishing that he's an unstoppable force. And one of the ways that you'd be in, that you be an unstoppable force is by getting everyone to give you what you want. Immediately,
yeah,
you know? And
yeah,
so that's like anyway, it was just great.
It's also one of those things, it's like, it's really eerie, which Terminator has been able to do for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Like, there was a couple of scenes in there that, like, when they get on the train at nighttime and they're driving away, or and they're on the, whatever a train does, moves away, doesn't drive, I guess, it just chugs away. I don't know what the verb is. And it's going away. And in the dark, you see just a bunch of people lit up by the light of their phones.
Yeah.
And it just, like, in that moment when it's dark, but you have the light of the phone, and then you have this woman that is half machine, half human, or whatever the percentage is, standing among all these people that are laying down, sucked to their phones. It really kind of gave me an eerie feeling. Not only that, but very soon after, my phone in the middle of the theater decided to play music.
You're going to pull it up?
And
your most embarrassing moment of your life?
It was terrible. And it was like, and my wife's like, what is that? And I was like, hon, it's part of the movie. It's fine. And she like looks at me. She's like, no, that's not. And I was like, no, no, it's fine. It is. And then it registered that the music was playing was Eminem. And I was like, that doesn't seem like it fits the movie very well. And I pull out my phone and it's just going, and it's on like the third song. So I don't know. I don't know how that happened. Anyway, I think what I'm saying is my phone is Skynet. But this movie had kind of that eerie feeling of like what technology is, and the idea that what we're going towards with Google Home and Alexa is the ability for machines to to analyze human behavior and then reflect it back to a in a way that makes sense to us, which is what the Terminator did. In the future, when we have mastered that, this guy's like, this Terminator is analyzing the behavior. This is where my mind went, at least. Analyzing the behavior and is like, okay, what year is it? Okay. I have a metal hip from Afghanistan. Yeah. Knowing that that's the perfect thing to say in that moment.
To not get searched.
To not get searched. And it like the idea that a machine can get there, because it feels like we're on that path. It just kind of freaks me out a little bit, which I think is what Terminator is trying to do.
Yeah. No, yeah. I thought it was absolutely great. Like insofar as like we made or insofar as this movie made the threat of machines taking over more current, it felt totally appropriate.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, absolutely. If there was a machine hunting down whatever, like this is, yeah.
On the subject of the Terminator, I don't know what they were doing. I think I do. It seems fairly straightforward. I want to complicate it in my head, but maybe it just doesn't. It's just not complicated. But I don't. The idea that the bad guy is human on the outside, machine on the inside, and then basically a human machine, but run by machine, and then the good guy is also a human machine, but run by a human. Kind of the idea that machine on its own, bad. Machine, you know, that's run by humans, good.
Yeah.
And like this, the contrast of the it's not just machine versus machine. It's like a human that is harnessing the power of the machine.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. Like, I like that idea.
Of who's in charge, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, I mean,
who's making the decisions?
Yeah. You want, which I think, you know, this, I wouldn't say that this film was sophisticated enough to deliver any kind of like treaty on this subject, but the subject is absolutely worth exploring. And hopefully for the, you know, whoever ended up seeing this movie and thinking about it at all beyond what a cool action movie, or what a, you know, boring action movie that I didn't care about if people didn't like it, whatever. if people thought about it at all, I hope that it, you know, the interesting conversation is how do we in our actual world that we actually live in make it so that we are not in service of our machines, but that our machines are in service of us.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really important question. In fact, it's probably the generation defining question right now. Like that is the only question that matters in our culture because that question touches every current problem and issue that we face as a community of humans.
I mean, right, it's definitely applicable to the people that are listening to this. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Hopefully right now your machine is in service of you, not the other way around. But yeah, I mean, the
unless you're if you're avoiding something you should be doing by
that's true
to this show,
that's true.
If you're procrastinating hard work by pulling out your phone and putting in your earbuds and listening to a podcast that you love. And we know you love this podcast.
We get it.
And we're grateful. and we understand. But if you're avoiding something by listening to a podcast, which I feel like most people don't do. Usually you listen to a podcast while
to
you're
be
doing
productive.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the point. Is if you when you use your phone as an escape device or as a whatever, like you are actually serving the technology.
Yeah.
It's no longer serving you.
Yeah, I mean, like the if you have an iPhone, there's the Screen Time app. I think that's a pretty clear defining feature of like if you're in service of your phone or your phone's in service of you.
Yeah.
And
it's
I wish
give you some important data about that relationship.
And I wish that this movie was more like it would have been really cool if they were able to do a really cool action movie and service this idea a little more and pose questions to us.
This movie did not do that.
It did not do that. But it's still a really important conversation to have, and it's being inspired by this movie. So,
yay!
Who knows?
Yay! So, in the interest of continuing to nerd out a little bit, CJ, I want to hear your thoughts about Linda Hamilton.
I wish that her entrance was not in the trailer.
Mm. Yeah,
it was a bit deflated because of that, but like because the music cue was right, the whole action situation was right.
But I'd seen it like six times or 8 times.
We'd seen it. But if I hadn't, man, that would have landed. Oh, yeah. That would have really landed.
That's a great point. I kind of wish they hadn't given that away. Although, you know, I mean,
because Arnold's was not shown in the trailer. And that was kind of – it was more fun. It was less epic.
Yeah.
But it was a lot more impactful because I hadn't seen it 8 times.
Yeah.
My opinion on Linda Hamilton is that she is she is really good at portraying a badass. Really good at it. And she did that in this movie. I wanted a little bit more. I know what they were hinting at arc-wise. I wanted a little bit more definition from that arc. But she did great. The actress did great.
I know Linda Hamilton is capable of incredibly diverse and nuanced performances. I don't feel like she was given that much to do in this movie.
She was almost a caricature of Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
Not so much...
That's true. It's unfortunate because she has so much to offer, but still I enjoyed the crap out of watching.
Absolutely.
It was so much fun to watch.
Absolutely. I got two more things to nerd out about.
Yeah.
One is I genuinely do not know if the opening scene was filmed back then or if that was just CGI.
Oh, dude, it was totally CGI.
That was mind-blowing. That was the best recreation of younger people I have ever seen personally. Because you see it in like tidbits here and there, and it was probably short enough that it was able to be really impactful. But that John Connor is like 30 years later, and he's still in. I just was very impressed.
They did a good job. They did a good job.
Land as positively with you?
You know what? We might as well just go into... We just might as well go into the criticism stuff here, unless you have one more thing you want to hit.
I can bring it up in the critical thoughts.
Here's the thing. The beginning to me felt like a rushed plot fixer to me. Mm. Crap, what do? We need to explain John's not around anymore. To make this plot work that we want to do, so we have to off him. So how do we do that? Well, we have to show he has to have been killed by a Terminator. So better show don't tell, right? Okay. Well, we have to then. So it's just to me, it felt like reverse engineering the plot. Like I could see the plot being reverse engineered in that scene. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. John's not in this movie. It's not about John. That's why they're killing him. And also we need to understand why Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. There's always got to be an explanation for why Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. And so it felt very handsy to me. Like I don't like seeing the writer. I don't like seeing the plot construction process. There was a lot of that going on in this movie.
That's a good line. I don't like seeing the writer.
Yeah,
because you're right. You did see the writer a lot. Movie.
And this is something that I feel like is a kind of it's like the plague of modern blockbuster movies. And what I believe is happening is that there's a lot of neat ideas and then really neat action set pieces, and then they basically string them all together with a plot. Rather than growing the plot and trying to like see what fits and what doesn't and making decisions accordingly until the thing actually works as a whole story. If you go back and watch Terminator, Terminator 2, even I would say to a large degree Terminator 3, there is a very good and like clear through line of like how things fit together in a way that feels natural and organic so that by the end it's like sort of surprising and satisfying. And, like, that didn't happen in this movie.
Yeah.
Because all the way through, you could see, well, I know why they put that scene in here, so that they could figure this other thing out. You know, it felt very sort of patchworked together. And that was, I think, it started, like, my enthusiasm for the movie went down dramatically at the very beginning, because the first thing we saw was, well, not the first thing. I will actually, to nerd out, I loved. Yeah. The first thing we saw was the
monologue from T2.
Yeah, the monologue from T2 and the sort of lo-fi VHS whatever. And that was cool.
That was cool.
And also, I totally earned. You know, you're 30 years later. Like, yeah. Go for it. You know, it's all yours.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But like, after that, the next thing we see is, you know, like CGI, and I'm like, oh, okay. Is that okay?
You needed to hurry and do that. Then,
we needed to come in here and
go there.
Yeah, just give us some quick backstory.
Yeah,
to solve your problems later.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, that's the point of like, hey, we have these cool action set pieces. Let's build a plot around it. I was going to in the critical. Part of this, I was actually going to bring up. The first thing I was going to bring up is that this movie all of the bad qualities of Fast and the Furious without a ton of the good ones. And I feel like the Fast and the Furious franchise is a perfect example of how big can we go? Okay. They're gonna drop planes out, or they're gonna drop cars out of an airplane. How do we make them? Where does the plot go to make them there?
This is at least the third time that I've seen a vehicle dropped out of an airplane with a parachute.
Yeah, yeah.
Just without even thinking about it. Fast and Furious, A Team, Terminator.
Yeah, yeah.
Has
Mission Impossible done it?
Probably. I honestly, and it's been done more than that too. A bunch more. It's not that inventive. The only thing I will say is that I really did like if there was going to be even the slightest edge of like freshness or originality or even just appropriateness to the franchise here, I liked that in the air being what do you call it? Shepherded? What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. By two like littler planes. What's the word? Oh my gosh, this is so terrible. I hate it when this happens.
Escorted
is the word that I was looking for.
Right.
They had essentially a military Air Force escort, and then the you know this big honker pulls up and he's like, I need to refuel, and they're like, you're early, and then they're like, oh no,
runs into
and then immediately a bonk,
yeah.
You know, and then like so our you know Rev 9 flying the plane. Bonks both the other planes out of the air just immediately, like it's nothing, and then literally both rams the plane into the other plane and then jumps out like personally.
Yeah.
And I like it's the sweet sort of like purity of the of drive. Like you know what this character wants.
It's also no concerns. There's no inhibitions, right?
No, yeah.
And so that a robot trying to do that thing is what that makes sense.
It's just gonna go It's just gonna go for it. It's like in Terminator 2 when you see like whenever the T-1000 just like goes towards something and like gets in. And, like,
yeah, just sort of, doesn't it's
like,
stop.
Yeah, you just don't stop. You just, you know, okay, what's the next thing? And like, it was, that was really cool.
Sure.
But like also, yeah, we've seen that kind of thing
and a
bunch of times.
And it did feel like it was like, especially the way that it was featured in the trailer too. It was like, okay, guys, at one point, they're on a plane. All right. And it's going to be falling and they're going to be fighting. And so it's going to be like a zero gravity fight.
Yeah.
Is it? I mean, right?
What?
Right? Isn't that cool? And then they tried to figure out the plot to get it to that point, which I had never really recognized as a fault of movies. But you're right. That is the way that it felt. And it's a way that a lot of big action movies feel. And it's not necessarily what you're really looking for in a Terminator movie.
No.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fine with action set pieces, but like so much more satisfying to see something that is earned and a little smaller than it is to see something that's bigger and not earned.
Totally. I mean, we talked a little bit after the movie, we saw it together. I got the impression you didn't agree with me, but tell me if I'm wrong. I think that there are times that too much money can be a bad thing because I feel like this is a movie that if it had a lower budget, I mean, the budget was estimated at $185 million. It's a big budget. If the budget was potentially smaller, then maybe they would have been forced into more creative thinking in constructing kind of better set pieces or better earned moments because it's going to be naturally smaller.
I think that I understand the sentiment. I think that it's a little bit of an oversimplification. Because just to call out the little factoid that Terminator 2, at the time that it was released, was the most expensive movie that had ever been made.
Totally.
So I don't think money is the problem.
But it can be a contributing factor.
Avengers Endgame was the most expensive movie ever made.
Sure.
This is not a you had too big of a budget so you could do whatever you wanted problem. This is a you did not spend the time in development.
Mm.
You didn't spend the time and you didn't allow the creative process to fully mature for this script, for this idea, for this story, how it was supposed to work. Whatever the process was, whatever the creative culture was that produced this thing, it was not matured in the way that that would be ultimately satisfying. I don't know. I can't say whether that actually affects box office significantly. I can't say that because what we're going to talk, we're going to talk about this movie not making a ton of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I can't say, well, it's because the script wasn't very good or it's because there were problems in the script. Also, I'm not going to say the script wasn't very good. There were a lot of really cool scenes,
sure.
Some really great lines of dialogue and some really a lot of stuff to love. But like as a whole, it didn't quite fit together.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's why it failed in the box office.
I agree. I mean, fair enough is the response I wanted to say to that. I do think that. When you have enough money that it makes it more tempting and easier to find the shortcuts of, oh, I'll just pay for that and be done. Where I do think that having less money will lead you to creative thinking and learn and kind of, you know,
here's
what
a good example.
It can be a contributing factor.
Absolutely.
To shortcuts.
Here's a good example to support your argument.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Number is that?
It's fair. That's a fair question. That's number 5.
Okay.
It's the one where we are first introduced to Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, ends with a very quiet night scene of them chasing getting chased by the villain through the streets with very few other people.
And
they trap him in a box.
Spoiler.
They trap him in a glass box. And that whole scene, that whole ending sequence was basically the climactic third act was small and it was quiet and it's because they had run out of money. There was actually a much bigger set piece planned, but they ran out of time and money and they had to come up with something else. And so they came up with that. And that film is probably one of, if not the best in the series.
That moment is...
And it is a glorious
intense.
Moment.
Yeah, it is
so good in every possible way. But a lot of that is...
So I'm right 100% of the time. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that's what I heard.
I think that there is absolutely merit in that argument.
Thank you.
But I also think that, one of the other things that happens, and this doesn't necessarily... this isn't necessarily go against your argument. This is just another thing that happens is that sometimes a writer will turn in a script that they think, hey, I think this is really good and this is working really well. And the studio will say, it's actually not big enough.
Yeah. This
is an $80 million script. We're looking for a $150 million script.
Yeah.
And so go back and put more stuff in. And
That's crazy. That
happens
yeah.
like a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, so there's a conversation about that.
Yeah.
One other thing that I want to point out that I felt like was a pretty big kind of like, so two things. One short thing is to say, I think people are going to be a little annoyed if we don't acknowledge that a lot of the stuff that worked best in this movie was just aping T2.
Totally.
Like,
oh yeah, totally. It's a recreation
yeah,
of sorts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm fine with that.
Me too.
Like,
absolutely.
Whatever, you know? Like, whatever. In fact, to the degree that it departed from T2, it got a little weaker, and I would have preferred if it had ended even more,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I would have been perfectly happy if everything was the exact same. So one of the things that they wanted to do really badly was make it so that Donnie, the main character, was the point and not the mother of the point,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's a fine sentiment. Sure. I think that's really beautiful, and it's really necessary, and it's really great. Also, I think it's a little obvious and a little less satisfying as a major reveal. You know,
they leaned on it as a major reveal. It was obvious from
the beginning.
Scene two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, like, also because if you like, you know, the one thing they wouldn't have been willing to do, and they shouldn't have done, which they didn't do, and good, is literally just copy the plot.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
yeah,
Terminator sent back to kill the mother of the South, blah, 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 blah. And like, and then, you know, like, they're not going to do that. So what's the alternative? If they're here to save Danny, what other possible reason could there be?
Yeah.
She's the leader of a major resistance. Got it. Like, I assumed that literally from the trailer. There was no reveal there. And they treated it as though it was a big
totally.
Reveal. And that
totally
was
did.
Really upsetting. And the thing that was even more upsetting is that it leaned so hard that we got a bunch of flash forwards in the future, which were not good.
Yeah.
And the reason they weren't good is because there wasn't anything special or interesting about the post-apocalyptic scene that we saw. It was very tired. It was very tired. And I wasn't interested in seeing the future. Like, I a couple of flashbacks or flash forwards from the future is fine. Like, we've gotten them in every movie. We got them in T1. We got them in T2. We're going to get them. Like, that's fine. But, like, don't have entire scenes there. Don't have, like, a big sequence where there's dialogue and there's, like, you know, people emerging from the rubble and like rallying back. Like, don't do that, because then you're in it, you're suddenly a different movie, and like, I didn't come here to see that movie. I came here to see the movie where we're in 2019. And the other thing that was unfortunate is that Danny, as cute and as cool and as like great as she is, as like this very young woman, put her in the future and try to convince me that she's a 45 or something year old woman.
Yeah,
I do not believe you.
They didn't age her up at all.
She's tiny. She looks like a teenager, and she still was tiny and looked like a teenager. Yeah. And somehow she was supposed to be like 50. And like, I'm like, no. You got to do better.
Yeah.
Or else I'm out of it, man. This is hard for me to watch. So it was, you know, props to Natalia Reyes for like really. For, you know, doing her best. But, like, that was an impossible ask.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It was not fair.
So the last thing that I was going to nerd out about applies to this directly, which was there were a couple of small moments, small glimpses into the leader. It was well before they revealed it, but you knew in your head, so it was obvious. Of Danny. I thought it was Danny.
Danny, we'll say Danny.
Okay. Where Danny was like took control and was like the scene of no.
Yeah.
If it's going to end it, I'm going to be the bait and we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, cool. There's like a leader. There's a little leader in there.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. And that's what I was going to nerd out about. I enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. No, I really enjoyed that too.
But then
really
attached
to
same age, like going forward in time, it's not that she couldn't be a leader, but like, she's so young and she's so small.
Well, it's
and
just
she's
hard.
Just,
it's like you don't believe it. Like there wasn't whatever needed to happen.
She was the same person. There was apparently no character development at all between
and no aging.
2019 and no aging. No difference at all. She just plopped into 20, whatever, 40, 50, whatever
it
was.
Yeah. It was just, it felt too much.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the same thing goes for like introducing Linda Hamilton, or introducing Sarah Connor as like this hunter of Terminators and getting a text, you know, saying the date and the time or whatever. I'm like, that's fine. By the time we get to the reveal that it was, you know, the T-800 who had killed her son and all that stuff, it was a lot of like really forced narrative stuff.
Yeah.
Like getting the explanation of like every time there's a time travel, there's a ripple in the blah. I'm like, wow, like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you got to leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, somebody travels through time and then really you can only get away with that for like a second. And then we got to kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
Cause like when you start playing with the time travel stuff mechanically, what you're doing is you're essentially shining a light on the fact that this thing is built on absurdity.
Dude,
like, I don't get exposition
that happened in that cabin.
Oh, really?
It was
rough.
Bad. It was like, you grew a conscience? the equivalent of one.
Yeah.
And then it kept going. I was like, I didn't need to.
Yeah.
I didn't need to think about how he grew unconscious. And I didn't need him to say that
he'll never feel love the way a human does. I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to prove here?
Just say stuff like, I am reliable. I'm always here, and I have an incredible sense of humor.
Yeah.
Totally great, deadpan. Great line. Love great it. Line. Love it.
And then, like, you honestly, you can just leave this other stuff alone. Just leave it alone. Yeah. It all gets communicated by the actions, by the things that actually happen. Like, this, I'm sorry. Like, if making sacrifices for people you care about isn't love, I honestly don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So, like, clearly he loves just fine. We don't need to be told that he doesn't love as well as a human. That's lying. You are actually just lying to us now because we can see very clearly that he loves.
You do.
Ultimately, he's basically a Jesus figure in this movie. So like, there's a lot of that stuff going on. And I think, so all these complaints emerge to me from what always ends up feeling like just an underdeveloped script or an underdeveloped or whatever, or misdeveloped.
So do you think there's going to be more?
So, I don't know. I don't think so. I was reading an article. I can't remember exactly where it was. I'll see if I can find it, but no promises. That talked about how this wasn't this story doesn't feel as relevant to current generations because we are not afraid of technology the same way we were in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
That we no longer have the Cold War fear of nuclear winter. We no longer have computers are no longer terrifying. We are all relying on them completely all the time. Like
also like one of the first things kids understand.
Yeah, no. So
you've seen like a 3-year-old work an iPad?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
So, and anybody under the age of 40 at this point is not afraid of computers. Like we're just not. And so it's really hard to sell the core conceit of this movie, which is that eventually machines are going to rise up and destroy us. Like, that is just not something that we are afraid of anymore. And here's the thing. Maybe we should be.
Yeah.
But we're not.
I mean, it feels like with a little bit of altering with artificial intelligence, and because like people are paranoid that Alexa is always listening, right? There's like some stuff there, but generally, if you're telling me that it's a computer and like you go through their point of view and it's all like analyzing stuff and everything, it's not cool anymore.
Yeah.
Like that point of view is not interesting. I'm like, sure, yeah, like a computer can do that.
The sad fact
my phone
is,
can do that.
The sad fact is that the modern version of this story is not an action movie.
Totally.
The modern
it's
version
Ex
of
Machina.
The modern version of this story is a piece of software was sent back from the future to destroy your reputation before you could gain influence to change the course of technology. Like, and so you're fighting a war of attrition against misinformation on Facebook. Like, that's the modern version of Terminator.
It just like, you'll never be an influencer.
It's going to be a hard sell.
Dun, 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 dun.
You're going to have a hard time spending $185 million on that movie.
That's hilarious.
But honestly, that's where, and I think there is some, I think there is some subconscious fear about that, but when like nobody is afraid of robots of a robot uprising anymore. Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody. And so this is not a movie that is based on a current zeitgeist at all. It is trying to resurrect a franchise that got so big and so popular because of when it was made.
Yeah.
And it's a really great story. I really, really love it. But also, I get it. It's not modern. It's not modern. It's not going to capture new audiences. And so I would be surprised if there were any more after this. I don't think there will be. I think if there are, they're going to do much worse than this one did.
I agree. I could see a reboot that has nothing to do, like a reboot in a way that Like maybe someone's like, yeah, it's going to be a reboot of Terminator. But then after several revisions and everything, it becomes something completely different. Like, it just, the seed of Terminator doesn't work anymore, so it's going to become something different. So I could see, I can see a studio trying to milk it, just anything else that it can possibly get out of it. But hopefully the understanding is that it won't work and it becomes something else. That's where I live.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say is that before we did this episode, before at the end of the last Terminator episode that we did about the franchise, I said, I'm looking to see whether this movie can qualify as an acceptable alternative to my satisfying Terminator trilogy.
Yeah.
And what I've ultimately decided is that it's maybe tied with T3.
Maybe.
In terms of like being like an acceptable conclusion to the franchise.
It's just an alternate ending.
Yeah. Sure. Exactly. Yeah.
Watch one, then two, and then be like, you know what?
How am I feeling? I'll watch T3. Dark Fate.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
And that, you know, good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah.
That's what every filmmaker wants to hear. Your movie?
Good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah.
I think that's, I think that we have said all that we need to say.
You know what I'm excited about?
What are you excited about?
On Monday, we're going to be talking about Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes.
That is a cool movie.
That is an action movie.
Yeah, that is an action movie. And we are going to talk about that action movie.
Yeah.
In advance of the release of Charlie's Angels.
Clear tie?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got Furiosa, and we've got Elizabeth Banks.
There you go.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Is there any business? Anything to?
No.
Should we ask him to do anything? They say that part of a podcast success is people asking the audience to do stuff. So,
will you, listener, share this with your friends?
Please do.
Please do.
And if they're not a Terminator fan, we probably have an episode on a movie that they're a fan of.
Do you know there are 100
and 10
and almost 110 episodes of this show?
Yeah.
It's a lot of options for sharing with your friends, especially if you pick from the last 50 or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Although if they're I don't know what number it is, but if they're a Frozen fan and they're sensitive, don't show them. But if they're a Frozen fan with hard skin and they want to have their perspective changed a little, show them the Frozen episode.
Wow, okay.
I'm excited about the Frozen episode. I have a friend that is a fan of Frozen that I have not recommended the Frozen episode to yet because I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it's going
to
land.
Well,
with
I mean, eventually we're going to get to Frozen 2, and
that's
I'm,
true.
I'm we're not we're we're speeding up there. It's going to be true. It's going to be an interesting time. Yeah. Anyway, we should be done.
Okay. Thank you, Michael Baumiller, for the wonderful music.
Yes. It's all of our gratitude.
All of it.
And remember to love movies like a nerd. Respect them like a critic.
And cut.